And it is time for our monthly visit with Fireman Kenny.
Well, good morning, Rick, and good morning to all the listeners. KMG 365, Fireman Kenny's on the air, helping you to stay safe in a world where danger never takes a vacation. And as always, I've got my monthly shout-outs, so thank you to the anonymous mystery person who bought my lunch in the drive-thru at Arby's on Thursday, February 18th. Your kindness is greatly appreciated, and I will make sure to pay it forward at a restaurant in the future. So I was actually heading back from an appointment. I stopped at Arby's to get my lunch, and somebody saw me in the van, so thank you again for buying my lunch. And a shout-out to now-retired Battalion Chief John Spartz. John's last 24-hour shift with the West Bend Fire Department was on Saturday. John had 25 years full-time and was a paid-on-call firefighter for 7 years prior to being hired full-time. John was an integral member of the Hazardous Materials and Fire Investigations teams. Good luck to John in his retirement.
All right. I saw the video of his last ride home. That's a nice tradition.
Yeah, so we get to have a ride home on our last day in the fire truck. I wasn't here Sunday morning, but I think he had his family switch out because they took truck one. So they went from station to station, and he was in truck one, and the family members followed by, and each one of them got to go into the truck, is what the plan was. I don't know if that ended up happening. But, yeah, so John did a lot here, got a lot of things done. He's definitely going to be missed with his productivity and ability to just get things done when it came time to do things.
Awesome.
So we move on to our monthly sprinkler saves, or also known as fires you never hear about, because there's no news in something that was stopped from happening. And as I pointed out, I'm an advocate of fire sprinkler systems and a dues-paying member of the National Fire Sprinkler Association, www.nfsa.org. Be sure to follow the National Fire Sprinkler Association on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Our first save comes from the Madison area. On the evening of Monday, February 8th, the McFarland Fire Department was dispatched for an apartment fire on Farwell Street. Crews arrived on the scene at 10:27 p.m. to find the sprinkler system had contained a kitchen fire in an apartment. The building was being evacuated when firefighters arrived, and the fire was out by 10:45, according to McFarland Fire and Rescue. McFarland Fire and Rescue offered the following safety message to community members after the incident. The fire sprinklers contained the fire quickly and initiated the fire alarm system. The fire alarm system alerted the occupants and the 911 center of the fire. Without the fire sprinklers, the fire would have been much larger and the outcome would have become much worse. Now, there wasn't much said about what was being cooked or if it was unattended cooking. However, I'm sure there's a lesson to be learned here as well to make sure when you're cooking to be in the kitchen and making sure you know what's on the stove and always never leave the kitchen unattended.
10:27 p.m. That was a pizza in the oven, I'm betting.
I'm sure it probably was, yes.
That's my call on that one, pizza in the oven.
Yeah, I would probably agree. I'll have to look and see what they came up with for that one.
All right.
Our second sprinkler save is from the city of Madison. On Wednesday, February 10th, the Madison Fire Department was dispatched to a fire alarm at 1513 Parkside Drive. A worker there directed firefighters toward the alarm. As firefighters entered the facility, which manufactures packaging material, they noticed a light haze in the air. They proceeded through the building and eventually found water flowing from a room where it was clear a large fire had occurred. The fire was already extinguished. Although there were workers in the vicinity at the time of the fire, none were injured. The fire caused significant damage to a machine. The automatic water and carbon dioxide extinguisher systems that were in place to protect the equipment in case of the fire did their job, extinguishing the fire quickly and keeping damage contained to the fire's point of origin. Through interviews and scene investigation, firefighters determined the fire was accidental in nature.
And that happens sometimes, you know, when the sprinklers go off, electronics sometimes get the worst end of it.
Yes. And again, like we talk about that, how there is damage from the sprinkler system. However, there's always damage from a fire. It's easier to dry things out than it is to unburn them. So this is an instance where the sprinkler system, again, did its job. and kept damage from being worse than if there was not a fire extinguisher, fire sprinkler system.
And even spreading through the rest of the building, maybe.
And possibly injuring or killing people.
Yep.
Correct.
All right, let's go up north.
Yeah, we're going to go way up north. The Anago Fire Department was dispatched to a fire at Dano's Inc. in the city of Anago at 7 p.m. on Thursday, February 11th. Dano's is a manufacturer of wood pellets, animal bedding, and commercial fibers, so there's really nothing more flammable than that. Those products are highly flammable, and the building has a high fire load. The Anago Fire Department was able to supply the sprinkler system and suppress the fire. So this one, it sounded to me like there were maybe some issues with the sprinkler system at first, with some talks with the people from the Anago Fire Department. The building was undergoing some system upgrades, but hadn't quite completed them. So the sprinkler system kept it in check. The fire department was able to access the fire department connection, supply it, and suppress the fire. One of the things I was asked by the Anago Fire Department, for those people who are out plowing, please make sure to not plow the fire department connection in. So they had to do a little digging of the snow to get to the FDC to be able to supply the fire department connection. Please make sure, all of you who are out plowing, to not bury that fire department connection. That's very important for us to get to and supply additional water to the FDC and supply the fire suppression systems in the building.
Now, that's not the fire hydrant. This is up next. This is up right by the building.
Yeah, so you, in most instances, it'll be directly connected to the building. So it's either going to be a Y where it's got two and a half inch connections, or it could be 1 5-inch connection. Sometimes they're away from the building, so sometimes you'll see a pipe sticking up in the ground that either has a 5-inch connection or 2 2.5s. But yeah, be sure to not bury that that FDC as well as the fire hydrant. Please don't bury the fire hydrants. That those two things are pretty important. Getting water out of the ground and getting water into the building are pretty important when it comes to fighting a fire. So those people who are operating plow businesses, please don't bury those.
So that's what that connection is. You just solved a mystery in my mind, because I've seen those on the building. You know, when you pull up and you're in looking, going, water and sewer? I don't know.
Right, yeah. So actually what happens is, because if, under most instances, the sprinkler system and a single sprinkler head will suppress a fire. On occasion, so like let's say in this case, something wrong with the sprinkler system and the fire load in the building, what actually happens is there's a clapper valve that once we take over, so once we supply water in there, because we're going to supply at a little higher pressures than the municipal water system, that clapper valve closes. Now we, the fire department, has fully taken over the suppression system in the building. So we are supplying water to that sprinkler system, and the municipal system is no longer supplying it because the pressure, and we don't want our water that we're supplying to backfill into the drinking water, just
sure,
in case, like let's say we've got a hydrant that hasn't been flushed in a while and you end up with a lot of rust and maybe some bacteria or something like that. So we completely take over that system, and then we're able to supply more water at a higher pressure to be able to suppress a fire that may have overrun the sprinkler system.
Interesting. Hey, I learned something today. What do you know?
Yeah, I'll see if I can find a video on that. We can post that on the WIBD Facebook page.
There we go. So yeah, we have one more sprinkler save?
Yep. On Tuesday, February 16th at 3:49 a.m., the Grand Chute Fire Department was dispatched to the Walmart located at 955 Mutual Way for a report of a structure fire. Outagamie County 911 dispatchers provided additional information stating that employees advised that smoke was visible inside of the nail salon located at the front of the store.
Ooh.
City of Appleton and Village of Fox Crossing fire units also responded in accordance with the automatic aid agreements in place. First arriving Grand Chute Fire Department units found a fire in the nail salon, which was being controlled by the building's automatic sprinkler system. Fire crews worked to locate and extinguish the remaining pockets of fire, which were confined to the nail salon occupancy. Despite the fire and smoke being confined to the small area of the building, the entire store was evacuated as a precaution. Fire personnel remained on scene for several hours conducting ventilation and overhaul operations. No civilian or responder injuries were reported, and fire investigators determined that the cause of the fire to be an unattended space heater. So make sure to unplug and turn off those space heaters when not in use. In the midst of this extremely frigid weather, your GCFD reminds you to employ safe heating practices in your homes and in your businesses.
So there we have it. We seem to end up with one of our favorites, either a space heater or a dehumidifier, on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah, well. And that's why we got to make sure that we are checking on these appliances, making sure, again, if you have one of these heat-producing appliances, plug it into its own outlet, and make sure to always make sure they're attended. If they're not in use, make sure to unplug them and put them in a safe space.
I had a nice chat yesterday with the woman who is the wildfire prevention specialist with the DNR, and we talked about the danger of wildfires and so on and so forth. And I've got news cuts I'll use for the next month on it probably. But one of the things that she talked about is that now is the time before all the snow is gone. If you're going to burn leaves and brush and that kind of stuff, now is the time, but it's not the time to do it if you live in the city of West Bend, right?
Correct. So, as a matter of fact, we had just updated Chapter 5, which is the fire ordinance for the city of West Bend. So that is actually on the website, and it dictates the open burning. So there is no actual open burning. There are rules for fire pits. So you can have a fire pit. So whether that's a commercially manufactured fire pit that you would buy at, let's say, Menards or Home Depot or something like that. Those have to be follow all the manufacturer recommendations, which would mean you need the spark arrestor screen and cover. Has to be no closer than 10 feet from a structure. And those in the fire, you can only burn chemically non-treated wood. So that means no construction grade materials, no grass clippings, no brush, or anything else. So only non-chemically treated wood that's meant to be burned. The new ordinance also puts in the requirements for the built-in fire pit. So those are, and again, our ordinance mirrors what the national standards are. So it's no closer than 25 feet from a structure, no closer than 10 feet from a fence or overhang, 6 feet from the lot line, and even though most manufacturer recommendations, so when you buy those, you buy the ring. So the ring can't be any larger than 36 inches in diameter. It's got to be at least 6 inches into the ground, no higher than 2 feet in the air. It's got to be surrounded by non-combustible material. So whether that's concrete or the blocks and pavers that they sell to go around those. And again, no brush. No grass clippings, only chemically non-treated wood. And remember, if you're burning, if you're having an open fire in the city, the smoke is also subject to the nuisance ordinance. So if your neighbor complains because the wind's blowing and the smoke is blowing directly into their house, they can call the police department and the police department will show up and either have you put out your fire. If you refuse to put out your fire, it is subject to a fine. I don't know how much the fine is, but that would be subject to a fine as well.
Interesting. All right. And we'll talk maybe next month about grill safety because we're getting to that point. I mean, I guarantee you there are people grilling tonight.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And there's nothing better than my neighbor was using his smoker the other day. So he had that out and he was smoking some prime rib, I think it was.
Ooh.
And it looked good. So we'll have to have some time over the summer because we actually have a combination gas grill, charcoal grill and smoker. So we're going to have them over for some Pabst Blue Ribbons and some steaks sometime over the summer.
I had some of the best smoked prime rib I had. It was a commercial operation. It was at a graduation party. And they used a rub that had coffee in it.
Ooh, that sounds good.
it was just added a completely different dimension to the taste.
Yeah.
And so just passing that along.
Yeah,
so
we'll have to come up with different rubs and have a when we talk about grilling, we'll have to have some best recipes for the grilling and the smoking.
There we go. We'll video that and put that on the Facebook page.
Yes. Yeah.
So March is Brain Injury Awareness Month.
Yes, it is. So for more than three decades, the Brain Injury Association of America has proudly led the nation in observing Brain Injury Awareness Month by conducting an engaging public awareness campaign in March of each year. The theme for the 21 to 23 campaign is More Than My Brain Injury. The hashtag More Than My Brain Injury public awareness campaign provides a platform for educating the general public about the incidence of brain injury and the needs of people with brain injuries and their families. Individuals who join us to help raise awareness with the hashtag More Than My Brain Injury campaign are essential to increasing understanding of brain injury as a chronic condition, reducing the stigma associated with having a brain injury, showcasing the diversity of injury and the demographics of the community, and improving care and support for individuals with brain injury and their families. So here's some brain injury facts and statistics. Brain injury is a leading cause of death and disability in the U.S. An acquired brain injury, or an ABI, is an injury to the brain that is not hereditary, congenital, degenerative, or induced by birth trauma. Essentially, this type of brain injury is one that has occurred after birth. There are two types of acquired brain injury, traumatic and non-traumatic. So a traumatic brain injury, or a TBI, is defined as an alteration in brain function or other evidence of brain pathology caused by an external force or trauma. Traumatic impact injuries can be defined as closed or non-penetrating or open and penetrating. Often and somewhat confusingly referred to as an acquired brain injury, a non-traumatic brain injury causes damage to the brain by internal factors such as a lack of oxygen, exposure to toxins, and pressure from a tumor or anything additional.
All right.
More than 3.6 million people sustain an acquired brain injury every year. At least 2.8 million Americans sustain a traumatic brain injury every year. So about 48% of them are from falls, 17% are from being struck by or against something, 13% are from motor vehicle accidents, 8% are from assaults, and 13% are from other or unknown sources. So sometimes, like, this might be somebody that has a brain injury and nobody was around to know what happened. So, and they're not going to remember. So that's why that's classified in such a big area.
Ah, okay.
There are 5.3 million children and adults in the United States who are living with a permanent brain injury related disability. Typical causes of an ABI include electric shock, infectious disease, lightning strikes, oxygen deprivation, toxic exposure, vehicle accidents, seizure disorder, trauma, substance abuse or overdose, or stroke. For more information, visit the Brain Injury Association of America website, www.biausa.org.
All right. So it's there are a lot of different kinds of brain injuries out there, as we just talked about. And sometimes there's a sort of a stigma attached if you have a brain injury, isn't there?
Yeah, well, because sometimes, like, let's say you get a brain injury and you may not be the same afterwards. It can change your personality. So I knew of one instance where there was a woman who had a slight stroke. And when she recovered, she almost fully recovered but lost some empathy. And then it changed her life. She ended up divorced from her husband, and I didn't follow up after that, but it can change your entire personality. Some people end up with anger issues because your brain is basically salt water and electrical impulses, and then when you end up with some sort of anger issues or the frustration, so like let's say when somebody has a stroke you can almost fully recover. But, like, let's say you end up with losing some speech ability, and their mind is working fine, but they can't quite get the words out, so that leads to some frustration. So any type of brain injury, you've got the stigma that goes with it that something is wrong, and it is, but the person is really kind of still in there, but they can't quite do all of the things that they have done in the past, and whether it's the speech or even motor function. So let's say the parts of the brain that control the motor function, you may not be able to use your hands the way that you had done before, or it may cause difficulty walking. So there is a stigma that goes with it, but some people fully recover, and others it takes time to get full recovery, and we're talking years. It needs to be a greater awareness from the general public of what is happening and what could happen to people they know or themselves. That way, there's a greater appreciation for the amount of time it takes, the amount of effort it takes to become fully active again and to become almost your back to your normal self.
Well, and I will tell you that I still the only lasting effect that I know of from my stroke is that my handwriting went from bad to worse. And it still is a writing checks is something that is difficult for me to do.
Yep.
Of course, besides the fact that I'm cheap, but that's another story.
Well, and the thing is, what you'll have to do is it probably will come back over time, but those impulses from your brain that go to your hand, they have to retrain themselves. So what you're trying to use the old pathways, which are interrupted. And at some point, if you are working on practicing and working like with the therapist, at some point, there'll be new pathways in your brain that will work its way down to your hand, and you'll end up with a new writing style. You're trying to write with your old writing style, and you have to train your brain to write into a new writing style if you want really nice handwriting again.
Yeah, never mind. I type most of my stuff anyway.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, my writing's terrible too, and I tend not to worry about it too much. People can read it. One of my old lieutenants said it, I signed my name like a doctor. So,
right.
Hopefully, that was a compliment. You know, I look like a doctor writing.
So, the next topic we're going to cover, we've got about 6 or 7 minutes here. Is right out of the headlines. Inhalants and Poison Awareness Week is coming up.
Yes, and so again, this follows with Brain Injury Awareness Association information, because this one of the listings of substance abuse or overdose. So National Inhalants and Poisons Awareness Week is March 21st to the 27th. The third week in March is always National Inhalant and Poison Awareness Week. This prevention week focuses on providing education, resources, and information on the risk of inhalant use. Almost every home in America has items in it that can be potentially poisonous or dangerous. Being aware of these dangers is important. So what are inhalants? Although other materials that are misused can be inhaled, the term inhalants refers to the various substances that people typically take in only by inhaling. These substances include solvents, aerosol sprays, gases, and nitrites. One hit of an inhalant can cause nausea, limb spasms, loss of consciousness and asphyxiation, and death. Prolonged inhalant abuse over a lifetime can cause damage to the area of the brain that controls memory, making it difficult to impossible to learn new things and even carry on simple conversations. Hearing loss, speech impediments, bone marrow injury and damage to the central nervous system, and addiction.
Now, I'm guessing that there are quite a few reports that come from the PD, and essentially also through the fire department, through emergency calls. There are still a fair number of inhalant-related calls in West Bend, aren't there?
Yeah, so we don't get them as much just because there's very few times where they're going to need an ambulance response, just because when people are they're putting them into, like, let's say, a paper bag and huffing them, and so they will usually not be as sick. So we don't see as many calls from police department because they're going to respond first. But yeah, occasionally we will have somebody that has overdosed on an inhalant. In most instances, they're either really sick or they're unresponsive. So again, causing serious injury to the central nervous system because these things are not meant to be inhaled. So when kids start huffing or adults start huffing, this is realistically a hazardous materials call because they are inhaling the above the maximum allowable quantities that are allowed in your body to be used. And so the high that they're experiencing is actually them being poisoned. So you are being poisoned. You are killing brain cells. You're killing other, like, let's say, your sense of smell. So this is one thing that people do, but they shouldn't be doing because they don't realize how much damage they're actually doing to their body when they're taking place in this activity.
All right, Fireman Kenny, let's talk about how you can prevent inhalant abuse.
Okay, so the first is to educate the youth on the dangers of inhalants. Most abusers are young adolescents who are eager to experiment on drugs. Being informed that there are dangers and possible fatalities of the act, and then some will not go that route. So education can be conducted by parents or guardians at home, at school, or at school levels. The second one would be arrest the peddlers. Though inhalants are cheap and can be found nearly everywhere, there is always a person whose sole business is to sell them as drugs rather than their intended useful way. So if that is identified, make sure that they are arrested, and then the chain will be broken. Engage young children in sports activities or other beneficial leisure. Idleness can lead to a desire for inhalants. Once they are engaged in sports like football and leisure activities like singing, they will find little or no time to contemplate the drugs. For more information, you can visit www.inhalants.org.
All right. Well, we're about out of time, but we do have an event coming up this weekend that we always want to tie in and make a little reminder.
Yeah, so Daylight Savings Time starts on Sunday, March 14th at 2 a.m. Just a reminder to change the batteries in your smoke alarms and carbon monoxide alarms when you change your clocks. So again, if you don't have, let's say in my house, I think almost all of my smoke alarms and my carbon monoxide alarms have the 10-year lithium ion batteries. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to test all my smoke alarms and carbon monoxide alarms, even if I don't have to change the batteries. And then one new thing, if you followed our Facebook page, you saw there was a thermostat that is run by batteries. So I didn't realize how many thermostats weren't run by the electricity in the house. The thermostats are run by the batteries. The thermostats died, which caused the sprinkler system to freeze in the building. So make sure we're adding this now to change the batteries in your thermostats when you change your clocks.
So see if your thermostat actually has a battery, and then you can go ahead. And also, while you're at it, while you're testing them, take a look at that expiration date.
Yeah, so make sure. So remember that the smoke alarms are good for 10 years. The carbon monoxide alarms are good for 7 years. So, and again, we still have smoke alarms available from the Red Cross as well as the PFFW Charitable Foundation. So if you need smoke alarms or carbon monoxide alarms installed in your home, you can call my office, 262-335-5055, and we can set up an appointment, and I can come install smoke alarms and carbon monoxide alarms in your home. Again, the Red Cross and the PFFW charities limit me to 3 each, so I've installed upwards of 12 smoke alarms in some bigger homes, so I can give you up to 6 smoke alarms and one carbon monoxide alarm. If you need more, then you can go buy them beforehand, and we can do an assessment to figure out how many you need, and I will install all of them in your home. So for carbon monoxide alarms, there should be one on each level of your home. I also recommend on at least one of them, probably in, near your laundry or near your the furnace or any other gas appliances, that they should also be a combustible gas alarm with them as well. So I have a combination carbon monoxide alarm and combustible gas alarm in my basement, and I also have carbon monoxide alarms on each floor outside the sleeping areas. So that way, if there's a carbon monoxide issue in my home while I'm sleeping, they're going to wake me up so I don't end up being overcome by carbon monoxide in my home.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And we will chat next month.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Rick. And thanks to all the listeners. KMG 365, Fireman Kenny is returning to quarters.